This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to another live midweek episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. Nice, quick, easy one. Not much to talk about at the moment. Obviously, we reconvene the day after Plymouth Argyle's 1-0 defeat at the hands of Danny Roll Sheffield Wednesday, leaving Argyle dangling just 2 points over the dreaded drop. I'm sure we'll get onto the pressure that Ian Foster finds himself under later on in the pod. But first, joining me tonight, I'm going to go in clockwise order. Joe Bell, how's things?
Yeah, good. Looking forward to a nice, quiet, calm edition of the pod. You know, we don't like anything too frantic, do we?
No, we don't. You're very, very right. Sam Down, how's things? Still standing?
Still standing. Still quite miserable after, travelling all that way and getting in at 4:10 to watch that rubbish. But we'll come on to that in a minute.
And back with a bang. John Allsop, how's things? Coming live from the Peak. Is it the Peak District you're in or the Lake District?
Yes, the Peak District, where I'm working on a project at a nice cottage that I definitely did not choose for its proximity to both Hillsborough and Ewood Park. Actually, I did choose it for its proximity to Hillsborough and Ewood Park, and I'm very, very glad that it is extremely nice. Otherwise, that would have been a terrible life decision. Aaron, before we get going, I couldn't help but notice that you didn't pronounce Danny Roll's name correctly. If you could maybe have another go at that with the music, that would be, because that is now scarred onto the inside of my eardrums from getting the tram back into Sheffield City Centre yesterday.
So is this the Danny Roll chant?
Danny Roll. It's quite good pattern, which is really annoying because I hate it.
I mean, I can't imagine we're going to have a chant like that for our head coach anytime soon. Sam, you've already alluded to it, your big trek. You were at Hillsborough last night. Do you want to give us our customary match run through? Maybe don't try not to touch on the situation with the head coach too much just yet.
Okay. Again, a very, very poor performance over 90 minutes. What really struck me was just how completely disjointed and discoordinated it was. I feel that in some of the other bad losses under Foster, not the West Brom one because that was just diabolical, but maybe in the Leeds Cup and the Leeds League game and even the Ipswich game, I got a sense of what we were trying to do. I didn't like it very much, but I got a sense of what we were aiming for, that it was going to be a solid, resolute performance and we were going to try and catch them on the break. I do not know what we were trying to do yesterday. Defensively, the back three were good. That's about the last positive thing I'll say about last night. I do think that all of Phillips, Gibson and Galloway all put in a solid performance individually, but our defensive shape was terrible. I think both central midfielders had a poor game. I think all of the wing-backs had bad games, those of which that played. Going forward, well, it was non-existent. We just hoofed it aimlessly, absolutely aimlessly, long balls into the channels to nobody at all. Just with the hope of winning a second ball, or with the hope of maybe pressuring the defender to get it up for a throw-in, I don't know. but it didn't work at all. We had one decent chance in the first half, which was the Miller angled shot that Beadle, their keeper, sort of parried away. And there was the Whittaker sort of snapshot second half that was ultimately fairly comfortable for him, but at least it got a shot on target. That was about the best chances we had all game. There was also the nearly chance early on when Hardy sort of came in, almost got one-on-one with Beadle, but their defender scuffed it away and obviously never quite got to him. It was just a really dire performance. Yes, I can see in the comments, Colin said we were better after Wednesday scored, which I agree we were, but it was from a very low bar. We had a decent sort of 10-15 minute spell, but that was, you know, they were sitting back. And by the way, Sheffield Wednesday, I don't want to be derogatory towards them because clearly their form under Danny Roll is excellent and he is a clearly very good manager. But as much as he has been excellent, broadly speaking, they weren't very good last night at all. They also were quite disjointed and they made too many individual mistakes. And the fact that they were so bad and we couldn't exploit that, they were bad, but they were better than us. I'm not, you know, they still had the better chances. Obviously, they had the header, I think, from a corner that was narrowly wide and he was completely unmarked. They had their goal. And I really don't think that their offside goal was offside, by the way. I've seen it again, and I think he's being played on. I think it's close. And if I were a Sheffield Wednesday fan, I'm not saying I'd be fuming about it, but I'd be a little bit peeved because I do think the player's onside. So we got a bit lucky there to not go into half-time 1-0 down. And then second half, we came out and again, sat in. There was no coordination, no organisation at all. Just again, a really, really poor performance. And it was certainly not a perfect second half performance. What a silly thing to say. I've got to say, Ian Foster does not help himself. I'm not going to talk too much about the general situation because I know Aaron's probably going to ask us all some searching questions on that later. But what a daft thing to say that it was a perfect performance. If you'd have said it was a better performance after they went 1-0 up, I could have gone along with that. If you'd have even said we stopped them playing after they went 1-0 up, I wouldn't agree with it, but I think that would be a reasonable interpretation of the game. But to say it was a perfect second half and to say the team were immense, I get that managers want to protect their players. I really do. But there is a fine line between bullishness and delusion. And that was firmly on the side of delusion. I don't think any single person in that ground, including himself, because as much as I've got my very, very major doubts about him, I don't think he's a complete idiot. I don't think any single person in that ground, including himself, believes what he said. Not one. And it's almost, I think, offensive to those who did travel all that way. And I don't pull out that card very often, but I will do now. I think it's offensive to those who have travelled all that way and spent all their money to have such a nonsensical comment mentioned. And I really think Ian Foster, who I, for all his frustration, I don't think he's a bad guy, needs much better media training if he is going to stay in this job. Because to use words like perfect and immense after what was a pretty dreadful performance by and large, whereby we were outplayed, outfought by a worse team, is a really silly thing to say. And very poor performance. In terms of the goal itself, obviously it comes from Forshaw giving it away, just failing to clear his lines. A bit of a rookie error, really, from such an experienced player, which is disappointing. I also think Connor Hazard can maybe do better. It's obviously quite close to him, the shot. He doesn't really have to get across goal. He's just slow getting down. And yeah, that, you know, as much as it's Forshaw's fault primarily, Hazard has to take his share of the blame for it as well. Came away very miserable, very immiserated after watching another very poor game of football, which we deservedly lost.
Yeah, John, we've already seen you get up and stoke the fire whilst live. I know you've not been on for a while, so I'll let you go next. Obviously, we've had our disagreements in the group chat, and I'm sure we'll get onto those. But on last night's performance, you were also both fuming and drowning your sorrows come full time.
Well, I was going to say quickly to Sam's point, you said that there's a fine line between bullishness and delusion, and Foster was on the delusion side of it. I don't know if I agree with that, because it certainly was something beginning with Bull that came out of his mouth after in his post-match interview. No, look, I obviously we'll come on to him and his future and everything in a bit, but as Aaron says, I haven't been on the pod for a while due to a variety of life events. I think actually only really once or twice in the Foster era, certainly, and certainly haven't been on since the West Brom game, which is, I think, when perceptions of him really started to go south. So, yeah, just to sort of offer a little bit of context to that, I have been much more on the defending him side of the ledger than some people in this podcast and others around the Argyle Life franchise, which isn't to say that, you know, I sort of love the bloke or you know, thought he was some kind of beyond criticism managerial genius. Not at all. But I just sort of felt that some of the commentary was very over the top for a guy who, until last night, in my opinion, and obviously, yeah, we can get into conversation about philosophy and style and lack of attacking intent and all the rest of it, had got results in games where you would hope that we would get a result, right? Huddersfield, Swansea, Cardiff, Borough, even Coventry, where, to be honest, I thought we would lose that game going in, because they're a very good side, you know, we're very close to winning that game. So, you know, I sort of felt it was a bit harsh to sort of be throwing around Foster out and similar kind of levels of criticism like that after problem performances that were admittedly not very good against sides who, you know, are right at the top of the league in the case of Ipswich and Leeds. And in the case of West Brom, obviously are fifth in the league and also are an excellent defensive side. And it just felt to me like maybe, you know, he deserved more of a chance than some of our fans were giving him. And I still, you know, I'm not going to completely abandon that opinion after one game. You know, against not a top side in the league that we have lost. But yeah, no, I'm very, very concerned after last night for the first time. Because last night it was obviously a very big game and it breaks the pattern under him of, you know, turning up in games where you would expect us to have a go at the other team and not turning up in games where, you know, we're playing against a much better side. I wasn't happy. Again, I wasn't happy with those performances against particularly West Brom and Ipswich. I thought the Leeds game, we were okay and just conceded goals at bad times. But I did think, you know, even in the West Brom game, it's very worst, even though we were very negative. There were some efforts to get in behind them in the first half, and it just felt like the final ball was completely lacking in quality. And what I will say a little bit about last night is I do think a significant problem under Foster, and I'm not saying it's not his fault at all, but there is a clear failure of execution, right? Like, it's not just that we are passing the ball backwards and not even trying to go forwards. Last night, our best player, Morgan Whittaker, got hold of the ball in five or six times in positions where you would expect him to hurt the other team, where earlier in the season, he was cutting onto his left foot, smacking it in the top corner, you know, doing an amazing pass. He did one or two of those last night. It was a very nice run down the wing that he did early on and put in a good ball. I think there was then a lofted ball across to Mikel Miller, who thrashed a shot at goal that was repelled. But apart from that, his touch was horrible. And like, this is not me, you know, criticising the bloke. I'm very well aware that he could have been in Munich last night with Lazio in the Champions League. You know, that was an opportunity that was on the table for him. So this is not me giving him stick at all. But, you know, is it Foster's fault that he seems to be completely out of confidence over the last couple of games? Maybe it is. Maybe it is Foster's fault. But also, you know, like, you can't necessarily, as a manager, always legislate for players making mistakes, not using the ball when they do get it in good areas. So I think there are some, you know, caveats and elements of mitigation here. I don't think it's necessarily a case of Foster needs to take all the blame and the players and the club need to take none. But yeah, I certainly, for the first time, in my opinion, we saw a total lack of ambition in a game against a team where, I don't want to say we were expected to win, because Sheffield Wednesday's league position is very deceptive. Obviously, they had such a horrible start. That actually, since Roll came in, I think they were, or certainly since just after that, they've been on top 10 form, must be approaching playoff form over the last couple of months. Now, I happen to agree with Sam. I thought they were very poor last night. I've seen them in a couple of other games that they've won at home where I also wasn't actually, you know, on TV, where I was not very impressed with them at all. So, but, you know, they are winning these games, so there is obviously something there. You know, they obviously are resilient. They obviously are, you know, just managing to get over the line against teams like us. So, you know, I don't think it's like the easiest game we'll ever have, which I guess is a bit counterintuitive against the technically the second worst team in the league, just because of how much they have trended up under Roll. And you do have to give them some credit for that. But yeah, it wasn't against one of the top teams in the league. It wasn't against one of the best teams in the league by any measure. And to be that disjointed and blunt and to not really look like we had any idea what we were doing coming over the halfway line was terrible. Yeah. So, you know, we'll come on to the Foster conversation later, and I suspect I'm going to be a more moderate voice in that than some, but, you know, still. So I do think there have been some positive signs under him, but, you know, the Saturday and the Saturday after are now absolutely huge, huge games. We cannot play like that again. We simply absolutely cannot. It was embarrassing.
Just so they're aware, people in the comments that are having a dig at John, there's no H, it's J-O-N. Carry on. You can still...
Can I quickly interject to make the mood even a bit grimmer? QPR are winning 1-0 against West Brom, who are a team that we couldn't compete with.
Not something I said, but okay.
That's good, though.
I know it's not something you said. It's something Ian Foster said. It wasn't a dig at you for once.
Joe, normally I interjects here and go to the full-time thoughts, but I don't know if you've got anything you want to add on last night first before we get into the meat of tonight's conversation.
I just think at the moment it's all very sad, to be honest, the position we now find ourselves in, because it was only 3-4 weeks ago, you know, 8-point cushion. Okay, we had a tough fixture list, but we'd come off the back of the Swansea win, the jubilation, the buoyancy of that first away win of the season. And, you know, and then it's just spiraled very quickly. And I can't disagree with too much the analysis the two boys have offered. Obviously, you know, they were there. So they obviously had a better take on it than me. But I just think it's really, really sad the position we're in, Aaron. I wouldn't have said a few weeks ago that we'd be sat here now after the Sheffield Wednesday game with the mood as a fan base we're in. I think, you know, we're going to come on to the finer details of it all in a minute, but that performance again, you know, first half, I agree with Sam. I think we were very lucky to be level at halftime. I can understand. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday have had two goals disallowed in the last two for offside goals. Now, this one wasn't as clear a mistake as the one at the weekend from the officials. But in my opinion, it was a mistake. I think he is onside. I think if they're giving it for offside from the first pass where they spray it out wide, that the linesman is guessing at who the ball is intended for, and that's not what he's there to do. I think that you've got to then look at how we responded in the second half. And I think the first 10 minutes had a little glimmer of hope that perhaps we were going to attack it a little bit differently to the second half. The problem is the half went on and on, the more and more likely it was that it was going to be a mistake that costs either team. And then lo and behold, we did get a mistake. And at the end of the day, say what you like about how the team were set up and everything, it is a mistake that's defined the game. It's not anything down to a tactical mishap or anything like that. It's for sure has been done trying to play out from the back, but that wasn't the first time that we've got ourselves into trouble playing out from the back. Equally, Sheffield Wednesday played themselves into a lot of issues playing out from the back. So it was one of those games. It was the basic fact of it was two really poor sides at this level going up against one another. And, you know, unfortunately, we succumbed to the pressure as that comment came. You know, the pressure was building and we succumbed to it. And unfortunately, I was sat there last night and I had absolutely no vision of us getting back into it. And that's a real sad way to be looking at a game of football. I no point that I sit there last night, I'm hopeful that we would have got back into it, but at no point was I confident. And look, you're probably going to ask us about the comments that were made in the post-match interview because they were a bit outrageous, one or two of the suggestions from him. But the one for me was when he said, you know, we bossed them second half for 20 minutes. Yes. That wasn't through our good play. That's because Sheffield Wednesday realised that all we could throw was a limp punch and they stood off us. They sat into a low block. They knew how to win the game. And, you know, kudos to them. They went and did it. And what I put out on Twitter last night, Aaron, and I said it to some of you guys in one of our group chats last night as well. I go back to that game in October. Danny Rule's, what, second game in charge, first or second game? And we beat them 3-0, and we thoroughly deserve to beat them 3-0. 4 months on from that game, I look at those two teams. One of them has got a clear style of play. One of them is driven. They're disciplined. They know their job. They know what's being asked of them. Another team were completely opposite of that. And I don't think they fully understood the objection that was thrown their way, not the objection, that they didn't fully understand the message that was put across to them last night. And I think that's a real concern. And you just look at the next two games. We've got the international break coming up, and you just look at the next two games, and we'll probably touch on it a little bit in a bit, but we've got to be very careful in the context of not just this season, but future seasons. We've got to be very careful about how we approach the next two games, because a lot is on the line. Because as we know, I'm not trying to preempt things that are coming, but as we all know, at this stage of the season, if you get into that bottom three, it's very hard to get back out of it again.
I do just want to say one thing, and I think this is, obviously everyone knows this. I think it is worth saying that, you know, while things are very sad and the mood has gone very toxic, and a large part of that is the fact that we've gone from playing, you know, swashbuckling attacking football to very much not that, or at least, you know, not that every single week and not really looking like we know how to execute it when teams kind of throw a sort of basic defensive manoeuvre in our way. A large part of the reason as well that things have gone so toxic is that two of the three teams in the bottom three have gone on mad runs of form. That is very, very unlucky. To be sat here at the beginning of March and for the teams in 23rd and 22nd to be on 38 points is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Like in any other season, I don't know, like, if, you know, if that's happened in recent memory, and someone can correct me if they know that it has. But that to me seems very, very unlikely. Foster's form in terms of points accumulated is really not that different to Shuey's at all. So while I kind of see where Joe is coming from, I think it says more about Sheffield Wednesday and the journey they've been on from, you know, because when, I mean, they were under Roll when they played us at Home Park, but it was very early days. He was still implementing a style. I think it says more about the journey they've gone on necessarily than us, because, you know, that Wednesday game came in the middle of a bunch of games against teams who are the sort of teams we played and lost to under Foster. And we still, by and large, lost those games under Schumacher as well. And while it is true that in some of them we had a go and you know, were more fearless than we were in the games under Foster, I don't think that is anywhere near as true as people are saying. I think people are forgetting that we went to Coventry, who, by the way, were actually, I think, below us in the table when we went there, or around about the same place, and didn't turn up whatsoever and didn't lay a glove on them. Went to West Brom and I thought played very well, but in what was, you know, mostly a defensive performance. Speak of West Brom, they apparently equalised, so there we go. You know, West Brom. Just keep saying this, maybe they'll score again. But yeah, you know, went to West Brom and drew 0-0, and I thought played very well that day. But it was, if I remember correctly, a very low XG game where we didn't create, you know, too much. And went to Leeds and didn't turn up for 85 minutes, really. So, and then, you know, got a goal kind of out of nothing and had a bit of a go late on. You know, I just don't necessarily think it's as true as, look, I think it's true to a certain extent. I don't think it's as true as people are saying that we, you know, that we've gone, you know, that we were sort of like this completely fearless gung-ho team who were going into every single game and taking it to the other team under Schumacher. And I think beating Wednesday 3-0 in October at home and losing 1-0 last night, it does not reflect that we have gone from like an amazing, brilliant, beating all comers team to one that, you know, isn't doing that. I think it reflects a lot more about Sheffield Wednesday.
John, can you seriously sit here now and tell me that you believe that squad fully understood what was asked of them,
no,
particularly in and around minute 30 to 60 last night?
No, I'm not going to sit here and say that because I don't think that's true. And I was very critical of the performance. There is something very wrong. I'm not denying that. What I'm saying is, I think some people have got this halcyon memory of the Shuey era in this league in their heads that is not true. And actually, you know, the points return under Foster has been about what it was under Shuey. And to go back to my original point, which is the one I wanted to make as a kind of slight rebuttal to you, Joe, the mood is partially so bad because we're staring relegation in the face. Well, normally, if you had 40 points at the end of February, you would not be anywhere near the relegation zone. And if we'd gone there and lost 1-0 last night, the mood would probably be, come on. See, I keep saying West Brom. We'd have gone there last night, maybe lost 1-0, played like that, and people would be pissed off and we'd be sat here grumbling. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about an existential crisis. And the fact that we are reflects on the fact that two teams in the bottom three have gone on a mental run of form that is like playoff promotion level form.
That's the hand we've been dealt, John. You just got to get on with the situation that's presented to yourself, regardless of what happens.
And also, you'll notice we haven't been relegated yet, and we're not in the relegation zone yet. Look, I'm not okay. Saying everything's like Fury. I'm not. I'm just saying that, like, all else being equal, but QPR and Wednesday doing what you would probably expect them to do, which is continue to be crap or like have a small uptick in form, but not like, you know, literally going and winning 4-5 in Wednesday's case or going and winning at Leicester. That's hard to legislate for. And I cannot honestly sit here and say we wouldn't be in this situation if Shuey was still the manager. I think people would be happier about the performance standards, and obviously he has a lot of credit in the bank. But I cannot honestly sit here and say, given the fact that Schumacher and Foster have accumulated points at about the same rate, that, you know, that we would be sailing out of it and thinking of the playoffs. I think we've, you know, the whole bottom half is in the shit at the moment, and I think that is, you know,
yeah. Well, I don't think anyone necessarily disagrees. I'm not sure that anyone necessarily disagrees with what you're saying, that this is a freak year in the Championship, because anyone from Watford down is genuinely in a relegation fight, whether they like it or not. However, as I said, this is the situation we find ourselves in right now. We're not here to defend other teams in and around us. We're here to talk about the position we find ourselves in, and it is all our own doing.
But it is.
That's the fact of it. It's all because of our own doing.
Well, but like, but we have picked up points under Foster at roughly the same rate as under Shuey. So you have to extend that analysis over the course of the season if that's going to be true.
Look,
the performance last night was very, very concerning. And if that happens again in the next two games, we have big, big problems, and then big decisions will need to be taken. I'm not denying that for one second. I'm really not sitting here trying to defend the bloke particularly. I just think that some nuance needs to be brought to this idea that we were a world-beating team and then he came in and everything's gone to shit. I just don't think that's true. Don't think it's supported by really any
evidence. Right. So at what point in my summary there did I say that we were a world-beating team and all of this? Like,
you said that, but people seem to be under that impression reading commentary on social media and talking to certain people.
Okay, brilliant.
I never thought I'd be the one who couldn't get a word in. That is a rarity.
No. Is it Mikey Johnson or Mickey Johnson? Either way, that lad, that goal, he's just smashed into the top corner for West Brom. Outstanding. I thought he was one of their better players when we played them, but he looks like some acquisition. There are nearly 800 people watching us live, and I'm sure they haven't come here for me to talk about West Brom's goal. A few full-time thoughts from yesterday then. A lot of them obviously feature the same sort of thing, which I'm sure we'll get onto. We'll get Joe and Sam's thoughts. We've already had John's, quite a few asking you if you're sniffing glue, John. I hope you're not doing that. Not live, anyway.
I do have a fire on, so there's a chance they have carbon monoxide poisoning, I guess.
Oh, brilliant.
Call the medics.
Yeah, nice. Like I said, quite a few of these follow the same trend. Lewin Reed, I would genuinely be happy for Nance to take over until the end of the season. Matt says the saddening thing that Wednesday were there for the taking as well. Lee Smith obviously isn't working out. Mood in the camps, he's fractured. Where's Wright? Where's Scar? Where is the backroom staff? We're going to get onto that question as well in a little bit. Barry says get Nance in for the weekend. Josh Rowe got to feel sorry for Hardy. His chances for a Scotland call-up have been taken away from him. Massively dented in the last few weeks. Maybe if I slow down and read properly, I'll be able to get these out. Mark Jeffrey, lack of purpose, no direction, drive or patterns of play. Wednesday weren't much better. Looked like two League One teams. Yet we know we're better than that, as the early season proved. I'm losing belief in Foster.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I think we'll just come to you, Sam. Let's come to Sam. Obviously, there was a big call last night for, you know, Ian Foster's head to be served up on a plate. You're not completely Foster out yet, are you?
No. I think he gets Saturday, and I think he just about should get Saturday. But I think we are very, very much on the brink now. I really think he's got to get something on Saturday, or else he would, or else I think he should, and quite possibly will, end up being dismissed. I'm not fully Foster out yet, just because for all the many, many reasons I have to be concerned, which I will go over for the next few minutes. I still think that despite that, there have been some small glimmers, the win at Middlesbrough, the win at home to Cardiff, and the draw against Coventry, as much as, you know, frustrating to throw it away as we did at the end, broadly a pretty good performance. So there are those glimmers. I'm not really counting the win at Swansea in this as such, because I do think that was heavily aided by them really just not having their finishing boots on that day. But I will maybe add to the positive glimmers the draw at Leeds as well, because ultimately that was a battling draw that took them to a replay. For all those positive glimmers, it's been pretty dreadful in my eyes overall over the 2 months he's been here. I'm going to refer to what I said, and I know it seems very smug and self-righteous to quote myself, but on the previous pod, I did also say how wrong I was to want rid of 4-3-3. So I'm now going to say possibly how right I was. I want to refer to my own words in the podcast, the emergency podcast after Ian Foster's hire, that everybody sort of jumped on calling me negative for, which is that I worry that this appointment has been made not wholly for the right reasons. I worry that he has been somebody who has been hired not because he is a good manager, but because he is a good person to manage. And I worry that as with the Derek Adams era, as much as Derek Adams did great stuff for us, as much as Neil Dewsnip has done great stuff for us, things can go sour when one person has too much control. Things went sour when Derek Adams got given the role of head of football, which was basically the role of director of football and manager all mixed into one. In 2018-19 season, that was a dreadful season. He fell out with everyone and we went down. And there were some pretty toxic, aggressive scenes at Accrington. I think we are possibly seeing a similar trajectory to some other extent, to some extent or other. I think that Neil Dewsnip clearly had strategic differences with Stephen Schumacher. We know this. That's part of why Schumacher left. That's pretty much an open secret. Nobody said anything publicly, but I think it's one of those things that is quite widely known to at least have some basis in truth. And I worry that Neil Dewsnip, and as much as he has been a good person for this football club, having too much control has very much had and has the potential to backfire. I'm sorry, I'm not talking as coherently as I like to be. I think I'm still a bit riled up. But I think we're now seeing how that can happen and how it has happened. I'm disappointed in so much. I'm disappointed in the change of style, and there has been a change of style. We can talk about whether it's a big change or a small change, but there has been a change in style. Far more of one. We're sitting off teams. We're not going at them. We're not having a go at them like we did before. We're not taking the game to teams. We're not playing bravely. We're sitting deep and hoping for a miracle, essentially. I'm disappointed about some of the stupid things he said in the media, and I don't want to be personal to him, but they are stupid things that he said. He's done himself any favours whatsoever with the way he spoke in the media. And I'm disappointed, really, I think, with the output as well. I know that John will point to the points per game being not that much worse than Schumacher's, but it is still slightly worse than Schumacher's. And furthermore to that, I think it was aided by, not entirely by fortune, because I said that happens in the Blimmers, but I think his points per game has been aided by fortune in a way Schumacher's wasn't quite. I do think there was an arguably a new manager bounce to some extent. Often players will just subconsciously give that little bit, 10% more that they maybe didn't even realise they had when they are playing for a new manager. This is a widely documented phenomenon. If anybody has read the Soconomics book, which is a fantastic read by two data scientists who have done basically economic studies into football, they pretty much said a new manager boost is a pretty universal thing across football, not always, but largely. And I think what a large part of why Foston's points per game is still not as good as Schumacher's, but the only reason I think his points per game isn't been touching distance of Schumacher's is because he did have that bit of a new manager bounce. And if you look at the form maybe since that new manager bounce has subsided, it's a lot worse. Our last seven games, we have got 4 points from the last available 21, and we have only scored in one of our last 5 games, that which is the two at Borough. Leeds we blanked, West Brom we blanked, Ipswich we blanked, and Sheffield Wednesday we blanked. From major fearlessness, attacking football, dynamism, fluidity. Yes, not always with perfect results. Yes, some games where we weren't as attacking. But crikey, even with West Brom, it's one of those where XG, as much as, look, I don't agree with Joe on XG, I think it's a fairly useful tool, but it doesn't tell the whole story. Our XG at West Brom was low, but and they defended very well, but our intent, our attacking shape, our dynamism was a lot better. And there were many occasions at West Brom where we got the ball into very good positions, but just didn't shoot. I remember that Ryan Hardy almost got himself one-on-one and sort of ran himself into a little bit of a blind alley. Again, great example of how even though it was actually a good chance, but the XG won't show that. So I think XG is a broadly good metric, but not a perfect metric. So I do think at West Brom away, we were far more fearless in the way we took the game to them. Leicester away, we were far more fearless. We had great chances in the first half from Callum Wright and somebody else who I can't remember, but we had two good chances in the first half at Leicester. Bundu, yeah, thank you. So we had two good chances in the first half at Leicester. Leeds is the one I will agree with John on. As I mentioned, I think there was a bit of a psychological collapse at Leeds in the league games. So Leeds is the one I fully agree with John that was. But surely
you cannot think we went to Coventry.
Game of Coventry. Yes, all right. I concede.
Tyreek Wright with half an hour to go. That's how much we
Yeah, that was a bit of a head. That was a bit of a head loss, but maybe that was, you know, Schumacher always tried weird and wonderful subs, and often they worked and often they didn't. Yeah, you know, he clearly just thought that throw Tyreek right on, bring him back from isolation, and he might just do some magic. And obviously, it didn't work out. Coventry, we weren't great, I would agree. And Leeds, we were poor for the first half. But by and large, the difference between the way we approach games under Schumacher and under Foster is night and day. It is absolutely night and day. And I think that not only is the style far worse and far less fun to watch, I think that the output is a lot worse as well. And I think the points per game is a bit of a fluke as it is at the minute. I think if Foster gets 5 or 6 more games, and I'd love it if he proved me wrong, I think if he's still in charge after Easter weekend, his points per game will be much worse than Schumacher's. Much worse, is my opinion on how this will play out.
If you had a chair, you'd be sat down.
Yes, and very good. Aaron's in absolute hysterics for a reason I can't quite fathom, but I'm sure he'll tell us in a bit.
All these ifs and buts, if this was a normal year in the Championship, John would say we wouldn't have anything to worry about.
Anyway. Before this just descends into total chaos, to summarise, I am very concerned. I wouldn't sack him yet. Well, I know for one thing the squad are are staying up there for the few nights between now and Blackburn. So I think that would be really chaotic to do it in that process. I think Simon Hannah is a considered person who will think about things and will make decisions calmly. But I also think that he's not somebody who's just going to blindly stand back and watch all this chaos unfold. And I think that if we lose at Blackburn, I think unless we put in a much improved and more intentful performance, I think that should be his last game as head coach of Argyle. And I think quite possibly it will be his last game as head coach of Argyle, because it's just not good enough on so many levels. And I think if he does, then there's also going to be questions to ask a higher up about the recruitment process and how things ended the way they did. If he proves me wrong, if he gets a barnstorming win at Blackburn like he did at Borough, and what's more, actually follows up on it and substantially increases our form and keeps our points per game similar to Schumacher's, or God knows, maybe even betters it, then I will be absolutely delighted if he proves me wrong. But I don't think it's going to happen. And I think he's got to be on the brink. And that's my final word on the matter for now.
He will be in charge for the game against Preston. I'm very, very confident of that.
Is it mad that he's going to be the least hated manager in... Ryan Lowe's going to be the least hated manager at home to Preston. Yeah, brilliant. I saw that somewhere else. I stole that from somebody else. Sorry. I can't remember who said it.
You've got an international break after that game. So, and like, you know, while I get it, and I'll get shouted at again for this, last night is arguably the first, like, result of his tenure that is a complete result, not performance, not, like, scoreline, but, like, you know, the actual, like, what, how many points did we get that's a total disaster since he took over. Now, I'm absolutely open to hearing all of the certain amounts of luck, certain amount of new manager bounce, and the performances do matter, obviously, and West Brom was a disgrace, you know, I'm not going to sit here and deny that, but they are much better than us. Like, you know, do you sack a manager after two defeats, you know, in games where you would have expected better, even if every other result has gone about as a neutral would have expected for this football club? Like, seriously, I'm not saying, you know, I think there are other factors here, which it seem to include the players downing tools a little bit, which certainly include all of the fans, you know, the relationship with the fans going completely sour. These are relevant things. But, like, I'm just thinking if you are Simon Hallett, does that seem like a reasonable thing to do? I suspect he is not going to sack him after the Blackburn game, unless we lose like 9-0. In which case, you know, that sort of thing tends to accelerate managerial departures. But I suspect he will get the next two games, and then a drastic decision might have to be made based on how competitive it is down there and needing some kind of bounce if things are going in the same toilet direction as Tuesday night evidence. But I think I think that's two games. I think we're quite a long way off being able to make any firm conclusions about the guy's future. And I suspect that Hallett's instinct will be to not sack him.
Aaron, without knowing what your running order is, I just want to chuck in on what John said there. And I do agree with him that last night is the first result in isolation that makes you think, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Because as he says, we have played the month of February against teams who are higher in the division with a lot of more quality than we've got. That's just fact. That's not, you know, we knew coming into this season a lot of teams were going to be better than us. And if you didn't believe that, we could go toe to toe with them with spirit and fight and everything else. But for out and out quality, where we are at the moment, teams were going to be a lot better than us. We can accept that. And I have quite a bit of sympathy for Ian Foster, to be perfectly honest with you, because I was one, and I will openly admit it, people can go back and listen to that special that we did when he was appointed late that night, I was quite excited by the unknown of this appointment, and it was an unknown quantity. He was coming in and it was a fresh idea, it was a different concept, you didn't know how it was going to go, and that's the problem, is that you didn't know how it was going to go. So I have a sympathy with him. He faced an almighty difficult first month in charge. We talked about this the other week, 14 player turnover, losing a lot of this team's key men. At the time, say whatever happens at Stoke has happened at Stoke. Say, like, Cundall and Azaz were vital to how we were playing at that time. And to have those taken away from him immediately, well, one of them even before he was in the door, is a big issue. He then loses all of the staff that were in the football club. So he's got to adapt to that. I do have an element of sympathy with Ian Foster. And look, when he came in, I remember talking after, I wasn't on the Huddersfield game, I can't remember what game it was, that it was very clear that he was showing that he wanted to change how we were playing. We were far too open. And I think he saw that in that first game against Sutton. That's a team who are bottom of the Football League. And there was a period in that second half where Sutton had us rocking. Like we were in, there was a period of that cup tie, we were in trouble. And this is Sutton. And I think that day he realised that we had to be more watertight at the back because we couldn't go on. We just come off a period of the interim management team playing games that finished 3-3, 2-2, 1-2, 3-3. Like, it was goals galore. It was great fun to watch, don't get me wrong. It was great entertainment. But from a head coach's point of view, it's a bloody nightmare to come into. So he wanted to shore it up. And look, I don't think we can doubt that it was probably the right thing to do to try and stop us being so leaky at the back. The problem is, it just looks to me like far too much tactical information has been thrown at them at once with all that upheaval of January. And we've just tried to run before we can walk a little bit under the new regime. Like, it just seems that we've gone, you can make a shift from one side of attacking to defending. You can meet in the middle. But it seems to me like we've gone far too much one side of the argument than actually meeting in the middle and making it work. And who knows, perhaps over the next couple of games, before the international break, we might see that we can find a neutral line in that argument and we might be able to mix a bit of attack and defence and make it work. The issue is, at the moment, we have gone far too much one side of that argument. And until that's addressed, and I'm not totally sure it's going to be addressed, in certainly between now and Blackburn, but that's the real issue for me, is that we've gone far too much one way. I understand that he tried to change it. I understand that he wanted to make us more sure at the back. But in doing that, it just looks like we've taken far too much of our own attacking threat. We've actually managed. So when you go into a game against decent quality teams, they'll always look at our team and think, right, how do we stop Hardy? How do we stop Whittaker? And the last month, we've sort of done that to ourselves. We've stopped our own attacking threats and we've not even given the opposition a job to do because we're so set on trying to keep the door shut and make it easier on our defence. And that's a real shame. And look, as I say, I do have sympathy with him. I'd love nothing more for this appointment to work out in the long run. I think we all would. Nobody ever wants to appoint a manager and for it not to work out, because that leaves then quite a few people with their reputations in a bit of trouble. However, there's going to have to be a quick turnaround, because we could find ourselves in a very, very dangerous place, not just for the rest of this season, but moving forward into future seasons. Hallett said, sometimes you've got to take one step back to take two steps forward, etc., at the Lands Fans Forum with the five-year plan and things. And perhaps, it wouldn't be the end of the world and things. But with the way football economics is at the moment, a relegation this year would not be a good thing, in my opinion, for the certain future of the football club.
Yeah, there's a few things I want to point out in the comments. Sam Barker, I know what you've done there. By saying jam first on a scrum. That's the way it goes. It's always jam first up the Cornish. I'm loving the
cream first all day long. Cream first all day long. Devon Lott, no.
Absolutely not. Not going to get into that debate now. Nearly 1,000, over 1,300 people. Which
Ian Foster doesn't have jam or cream on his scone. Am I doing that right? Is that the joke format?
Yeah, that's a better joke, I think.
That's what seems to be happening in the comments. Okay.
I don't know. You've all spoken a lot, so I don't know who wants this. But obviously, our mate Chris Webb, who's recently on Argyle Life, go and check that out. He tweeted, you know, last night about as tempting as it is to fire anger at Foster, he cannot carry all of the blame. He's never managed and been thrown into the most difficult championship in history with no assistant manager, no coaching staff of his own. So unprofessional. The club has to own this too. I don't know if any of you want. We've got copious of amounts of questions on it as well. I don't know if any of you specifically want to talk about the backroom staff and the lack of. Not exactly ideal, is it?
Yeah, I'll jump in and make a broader point here, because I think Joe has kind of actually just spoken to this a little bit already in his previous answer, and Sam obviously gave his answer about Juicenip earlier on, which so I think they've both kind of weighed in on this a little bit. Which is to say that, yeah, I saw that tweet from Chris. Absolutely 100% agree with it. You know, this is not, you know, even if you think Foster is very culpable for, you know, the what's going on the pitch at the moment, and obviously the negative results, which I, having been relatively defensive of him on here, you know, obviously do think is the case. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. And obviously we've gone from having a big technical staff to having no one, which is really weird, actually. And I don't have any inside intel as to why that's the case. Maybe it is just because everything has been going so lightning quick. We've had games Tuesday, Saturday, you know, and Foster's kind of moving over, you know, back to this country. And maybe just things are so hectic and crazy that they genuinely haven't had time. And it's possible, I guess, that when we finally get those 2 weeks off for the international break, that maybe, you know, we might start to see some appointments there. Although, obviously, if things have continued to go downhill and we're talking about sacking the manager, I suspect they probably won't be allowing him to appoint his own coaching staff unless, you know, they have no intention of him going anywhere. So, yeah, that's really weird and is quite an amateurish way of doing things, to be completely honest, if you want to be a sustainable club at this level. I'm inclined to agree with what Sam said earlier about the role of Juicenip, at least a little bit, without knowing fully what's going on behind the scenes. I think it's been a bit weird to see him, you know, taking a hands-on role in the dugout. Although I think, you know, I think actually I might have even said a few weeks ago I wasn't really too much into it. But I think in hindsight, thinking about it a bit more, it is a bit strange. You know, I'm sure that isn't helping. I think there are things that Foster is clearly very, very good at coaching. Like, I think out of possession, we're clearly a lot better, and that's meant to be something that's a specialty of his. I think defensively, we're a lot better. But yeah, you do need a coaching team with different people who are specialists in different parts of the game. And if there's parts where we're looking very disjointed, it wouldn't astonish me if a large part of the reason is we just don't have that, you know, coaching input coming in, you know, on the grass in between games. So that's weird. In terms of the sort of, like, you know, the club needing to own the kind of, you know, blame for the situation in a manner beyond that, I think that is true, as you know, as well, you know, beyond the issue of the backroom staff. I also do think that, you know, it's not necessarily a big cause for panic. I mean, we have a very poor budget for this league. We probably got promoted back to this league ahead of schedule, which is great. And obviously, you know, we do want to stay up, and after the season we've had, where we've looked like we're going to do that pretty comfortably, it would be a huge gut punch to go down. But as I said earlier, and again, this is not to absolve the club or Foster or anyone else of requisite amounts of blame for things that have gone wrong. But as I said earlier, not only has this kind of become a mental league now suddenly at the bottom, with teams up to 12th being sucked in because of the crazy standards being set down in the relegation zone, this will be the third season in a row that we are effectively having to, you know, overperform typical standards to achieve our objective, right? I mean, we missed out on the playoffs in League One with 80 points, which is almost unheard of. Needed, what was it in the end, Sam, 97 or 8 points to go up last season automatically? I can't remember what Sheffield Wednesday got.
Well, when Sheffield United, they didn't do anything.
No, I said
you said United, didn't you? I'm sure you said Sheffield United.
Maybe
I misheard you. Okay. Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday ended on 96 points, so we would have required 97. So in the playoff chase, Wickham ended on 83, so we would have required 84 with the goal difference. No, sorry, we had a better goal difference, so we would have required 83. So basically, for one of the very rare years, we would have required 83 to come sixth. For one of the very rare years, we would have required 97 to go up. And for a very rare year, we're probably going to require 51 or 52 or maybe even more to stay up. So we have an awful luck.
And I think probably more at the moment. Obviously, there could be a couple of teams that get hugely sucked down and don't get many more points. And, you know, obviously one of them could be us. But Hopefully it isn't. So maybe, you know, maybe
could be Watford the way it's looking. Could be Watford. They're losing again tonight just now, and they're only 6 points clear.
Yeah, so, you know, this is all, it's all a bit extreme. And I'll just finish by also about the club and the sort of five-year plan and that aspect of it. Joe is obviously right that because of the TV deal and other factors, it would be absolutely huge to stay up this summer financially. I think another part of this, by the way, is the sale of Morgan Whittaker, where we are going to get a lot less money for him if we are a League One club than if we are a Championship club in the summer, I suspect. And that obviously will have its own impact on the finances as well. This being said, I'm going to be consistent about this. I said last summer that if we were to get relegated, we would still be in a much better position going back down into League One than we would be if we'd never got promoted in the first place. Like, we punched above our weight to get promoted when really we were expected to finish sort of like 7th to 10th that season. Going up, having this experience of having gone up, you know, getting that in that experience in certain players who will probably stay with us if we were to go down, is going to stand us in good stead, I think, if unfortunately we do go down, and I think, you know, potentially could drag us into that kind of yo-yo tier of clubs here, Rotherham's and other clubs like that, which maybe we weren't in before. So there is a better chance then of kind of bouncing back. So obviously no one wants that to happen, and I really, 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 really hope it doesn't. And obviously there are very bad costs associated with going down, but I also think this is really like not all necessarily completely the end of the world and the cataclysm, and, you know, let's just remember where we were 10, 11, 12 years ago. This is not that at all. So I guess that's what I was going to say about that. The club still deserve credit for the things that we were giving them credit for 6 months ago, even if some of the recent decision-making has been questionable, I guess, is the kind of one-line takeaway.
Yeah, I agree with what John's saying broadly about the current situation. He's right in what he says. You know, nobody is devolved of any blame for the situation that we're in at the moment. Everyone is all, you know, deserving of criticism. It's, you know, the players are as well. It's not just the head coach, it's not just the board, it's the players as well, because ultimately they're out there to do a job. And there's only, you know, I always say there's only so much that the head coach slash manager can actually do. Just want to touch on John's point about relegation and what it could mean and things. And look, let's be real about it. We are still, it may not seem it right now, we are still in a good position. And I quantify that by saying our destiny is in our own hands. Like, we need to remember that our destiny is totally in our hands between what happens now and the end of the season. So while that is still the case, we are in an unbelievable position. It just looks bad because obviously we got beat last night. But just touching on the relegation, John referenced very quickly there the TV deal, and the cycle ends this season on the old EFL TV deal, and a new one begins from next season onwards. And I crunched some numbers today on the two TV deal rights, if you like. So next season, for being in the championship, basically the way the EFL works out, I'm just going to be very quick on this. The way the EFL works it out is they break it up 80, 12 and 8. 80% of the TV revenue goes to the championship, 12% goes to League One, 8% to League Two, etc. So the TV deal is worth to the Football League £935 million domestically from 2024 to 2029. The championships, 80% of 935 million is 748 million. Then you break that down over a 5-year period. You then get that yearly total that's due to the championship every year from the EFL. You then take that yearly figure, you divide it by 24 teams because there's 24 teams in the championship, and that is what each club gets. Now, from my rough mathematics, each club next season will get 6.2 million for being in the championship from the TV deal. 6.2 million. If we were to drop to League One, now at the moment, we are still in a position where that isn't happening, because if the season stopped right this moment, we would be playing championship football next season. If we drop to League One, that 6.2 million becomes £935,000. That is a stark drop. And with everything that's going on around the football club, with the Brickfields infrastructure, with Harper's, with everything that's going on with the development of Home Park, which still needs to be completed, a loss of 5.3 million without even kicking a ball is a big, big problem. So the football club will be fully aware of just the problem we're in. However, let's go back to it again. We are still in a position where we hold our own destiny in our hands. And therefore, whilst that, I know that everyone's downbeat at the moment and everyone wants to find someone to be the pinata that we get the proverbial stick at and we whack. Right now, we just need to focus on this 10-game mini season that's coming up. What you want from that 10 games, how many wins you think we can have, how many defeats is a maximum, minimum, whatever. We have a 10-game mini season to keep ourselves in the championship. And I hate to be that person that's got the green tinted glasses on and everyone will mock. But if you go back to the first day of the season and you'd said to us that with 10 games to go in a 10-game mini season, you would hold your destiny in your hands and you'd be a couple of points clear of the drop zone with a big goal difference still in your favour, we'd have all taken it. So, yes, by all means, we can be annoyed, we can be frustrated, we can be angry, we can be everything we want to be because we're paying supporters, we're entitled to our right, and nobody can take that away from us. But we also have to be realistic, and I mentioned on this very podcast last week or at the weekend or something, whenever it was, we do have the 24th budget in the league, and we always knew it was going to be a struggle. So I'm not trying to be a happy clapper. I'm not trying to tell everyone whose opinion is to get sat, change the manager, etc., that they're wrong. But we also do have to be a little bit grounded with everything we feel. That's my point over, Aaron, basically.
Oh, that's fine. I'm glad. I'm very happy when you tell me your point's over, because normally I think you've finished, butt in, and then you still carry on talking over the top of me. So appreciate that, Joe. Thank you. Nearly 1,600 people watching now. I know what it's like to be pie face. I might jump on Twitch, monetize this bad boy, get your custom emotes in. No, I'm not sure Pie's going to be joining us tonight now. Potentially another night. Anyway, moving on. I don't know if we've covered it because I do that thing where I can't multitask and barely listen. I'm basically just a front seat passenger here. That's not what I mean. I mean like a passenger princess. I tell you how to drive, but I don't actually know how to. Basically, have we mentioned? No, we haven't. Should we talk about?
Are you looking for backseat driver? I think it might be the term you're going for.
Yeah, maybe we'll go with that. We'll go with that. Should we touch on that, the press conference then, or not really a press conference, but it's post-match interview?
We've covered it, though, haven't we? We've all said some of his comments were ill-judged and ill-advised, and like I don't think we need to go over old ground with that.
I agree with him. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't.
Well,
no. Even I can't contrive an argument out of that.
Some of your thoughts in recent weeks in the group chat have had us all a bit worried. So, you know, it wouldn't completely surprise me if you had agreed with everything you'd said. Individual players form. There's quite a few conversations about what's happened to Whittaker and how much money we're going to get for Whittaker in the summer now.
Yeah.
Do you think that Foster's at fault for Whittaker's dip in form? He looks like a fraction of the player he was. Asim Kreber, what's happened to Whittaker? Justin Janna, should we have sold Whittaker in January for a top price? He's gone all quiet and lazy in the last couple of months. I wouldn't necessarily say it's lazy. I think there are elements of he's never been one that's been like fully in the game, has he? Sam, I feel like you were going to talk then. Go on.
I would like to say a few things about Whittaker. I want to say, first of all, even under Schumacher, when our play was so aggressive, so forward-thinking, so intentful, even then, he was never the best off-the-ball player in the world. He was fantastic on the ball, and still is, mostly. He's on a bit of a dip in form. But the problem, really, is now that we just don't get the ball to him. So all the stuff he can do so well on the ball, yes, you know, he's still getting some touches, but I think not nearly as many as he did overall, and certainly not with as many options around him and with such intent to you know, with the ability, if you like, to match his intent. He's just not getting in the games, and that is a direct result of the more defensive and less cohesive style of football. We cannot get the ball to him. That's the problem. I don't think he's really changed all that much. I think we've changed around him. That's what's happened, really. And it looks like he's changed massively because, yes, his standard of performance has hugely dropped, but a very large part of that is just because we can't get the ball to him. When we play so defensively and when the quality of our play when we do get forward is so poor, what's he going to do? He can't get the ball. That's a big, big issue. Look, do I think there's anything more to it than that? Yes, you know, there are... I'm going to be careful what I say here, because it's so unsubstantiated. There are rumours of unrest, shall I say, behind the scenes. And I'm not going to, you know, elaborate on all the rumours that are swirling around free chat and Twitter. You can see them all if you, you know, search them up. But there are rumours that there is some degree of unrest amongst the squad between themselves and the club hierarchy, certainly Ian Foster. Morgan Whittaker is somebody who, as Joe very eloquently said on previous pods that I've referred to a couple of times, when he's happy and when he's in that settled right frame of mind, would not rather be anywhere else in Home Park, apart from maybe, you know, Man City or whatever. He literally loved being here and still loves being here, I hope, so much. He turned down Lazio to be at this club. Lazio. He could have been playing at the Allianz Arena last night. Instead, he was playing at a cold Hillsborough, getting beat 1-0. That says to me how happy, until very recently, less than 6 weeks ago, he was to be at this club. Something's a bit off. I largely think it is tactical because of all I've just said before, but I also think something's off with him. I think his mind, his body language is just a bit off. His head's drooping a bit. His, you know, his attitude doesn't quite seem to be as perky, you know, with his facial expressions and the way he's moving as it was before. There seemed to be a bit of an exchange of words between him and Foster when he was subbed off at Borough. I tried not to read too much into that at the time because we'd won and we were all in a good mood, but that was a little bit of a concern in my mind. I just and his girlfriend, fiance, I'm not sure, tweeted a couple of things last night that were a little bit, could be seen to be a bit critical of the club. So I think there's something not quite right now. I don't want to speculate too much as to what it is because, you know, we all have our lives and obviously falling outs do happen, but when it starts affecting his performance and by implication affecting the club, I think it is a legitimate thing to raise. I don't think he's the same happy Morgan Whittaker who loves being here as he was 2 months ago. And I don't know. I think Ian Foster, even if he's not the cause behind that, which he may well not be, there may well be something going on behind the scenes that none of us are privy to. But even if Ian Foster is not the cause behind that, I think he has to address it. And I think he also has to address the style of football that's leading to him barely getting on the ball. But crikey, I'm seeing some comments, and I don't love and like to criticise the fans because, the fans pay their money, get to keep the players in a job, and by the way, they're great for us. Wow, 1,600 people listening to us is incredible that they want to hear whatever waffle I've got to say. And, you know, I don't ever want to criticise fans, but some of the fan comments about Whittaker, geez, you know, people saying he's lazy, he's this, he's that, you know, calling him every name under the sun I've seen on free chat. And I think for someone who's turned down Lazio to be with us not long ago, is just barking how quickly people have turned on him. It really is. And I don't think he's to blame. I think it's partly tactical, and I think it's partly maybe something in his head isn't quite where it was 2 months ago. And I think if both of those things can be addressed, he'll sort himself out. And thank you for the lovely comment by Rusty Gates about our podcast. I'm sure that's going to earn you a ban any moment now. Pleasure to have you listen, as always. Glad we've managed to live rent-free inside your head, and I'll pass the rest on to somebody else.
I also think, I have noticed that Whittaker is getting marked out of games also. And while I haven't done a close enough tactical analysis to be able to say this for sure, my strong suspicion is that when Azaz was here, we had a dual threat going forward where teams felt that they were kind of very distracted having to contain both of them, because if you put four men on Whittaker and Azaz gets the ball in space, he can do the same kind of madness, create a chance out of nothing things. It has to make a difference when you become the exclusive attacking focal point of a team and you have four or five men around you the whole time. Like, even Whittaker can't wriggle out of that most times. And I've noticed in recent games that has really been the case. I do completely agree with Sam that this is tactical. I think this is Foster's responsibility, whether it's his fault or whether he just needs to address it, one of those two things. Like, Foster clearly has a role in Whittaker's recent poor form, but I think there's also, because Azaz essentially kind of left just as Foster came in that transition period between Shuey / Juznip and then Foster, there's always a bit of a question mark in my head, which is, what if he'd stayed, you know, would things have been meaningfully different? Or, you know, if Shuey had stayed and we'd lost Azaz, would, you know, failed and sort of replaced him with the same kind of ballpark of player that we have brought in January, some of whom I think have actually been pretty good, and I don't mean this as a huge criticism of them, they're just obviously not Azaz level good. Part of me does wonder, you know, whether Whittaker, combined with Whittaker's amazing form, would have led to him getting shut down a lot more, even if all else was kind of equal in terms of the management side of things. So I do agree with Sam. I think that's obviously part of it. But I think there's also kind of other factors that have to be taken into account here. I think it's a bit simplistic to say it's, you know, a purely a tactical thing or purely a personal thing. I know you were saying both of those things, so your answer was nuanced in that sense. But I think, obviously, there's been a change to the personnel we have available in that area of the pitch that's been fairly consequential. So I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, Joe, moving on to Blackburn to do a semi-preview, I suppose. What needs to change on Saturday for... I suppose it's more just morale, right? We want to see a much better performance. Like, it's not all about... Obviously, it is about 3 points and staying up, right? But it's not... I feel like a good performance in which everybody comes away thinking, oh, bloody hell, we were unlucky there, is actually better. No, I was going to say it's better than a 1-0 win that we shit house, but that's bollocks. I would prefer that. If anything, please do that. Yeah, do that. What needs to change on Saturday, Joe? I'll shut up. This is why I don't talk.
It's a win. Like, you don't care how it comes. It's simple football. You win games, everyone's happy. Let's not be naive. One win on Saturday isn't going to change the entire mood of a fan base. That one win on Saturday isn't going to suddenly win a load of people round and get everyone on side. There's a lot of work that will need to be done on that. But that right now isn't the focus. The focus is trying to beat Blackburn and trying to get 3 more points on the board towards the end target. What needs to change? I think we need to play a system that clearly the players understand and buy into. I don't agree necessarily that, I mean, I saw a lot of hyperbole and things on Twitter last night that about now's time to drop Hazard and get Cooper in and things. And I understand when you're conceding goals, the keeper is the one who, takes a large chunk of the blame, but
why is this hyperbole? I mean, Cooper is an outstanding player who has just come back to fitness. I don't see it as hyperbole to suggest that he
and Connor Hazard is a very and Connor Hazard has had a very good season as a shot stopping goalkeeper, in my opinion.
Right,
I accept.
Like, this is just Cooper is just better than him. No, like, this isn't an anti Hazard take particularly. It's just a very pro.
No, I'm not sat here saying that Connor Hazard is a better goalkeeper than Mike Cooper. I'm just saying that, in my opinion, changing the goalkeeper on Saturday isn't going to suddenly guarantee us 3 points, is what I'm getting at.
I think it might help, though, Joe, is what people are saying. I agree with you, but I think it might help.
What will help is scoring goals. And right
well,
now...
Well, that as well, that, yeah.
Right now, that for me is our biggest concern, is that
Joe,
we suddenly...
Cooper has an authority where he looks so, like... much calmer on the ball with his feet than Hazard does. I don't think Hazard's like a terrible player with his feet. I think he looks like a worse player with his feet than he is most of the time because he sort of doesn't inspire confidence. But just that act of inspiring confidence and being and just, you know, again, this was in evidence last night. I was saying Sam about it, stood next to him in the ground. The times when Hazard could play out a quick early distribution and get us going on the counter-attack and he just doesn't do it. I don't think that's a Foster thing, by the way, because he has been like that all season. Cooper sees those early release opportunities. He is better with his feet. He looks more confident. He commands more respect into his back line. I think that can have a domino effect up through the team and can have a knock-on effect on scoring goals. No, I mean, in a game where one or two goals are possibly required, probably not a very high-scoring game, but yeah, that could be the difference. I wouldn't just see the goalkeeper as a kind of defensive last line position in our, you know, in a modern system.
And I'm always thrilled to see the goalkeeper with the ball at his feet. It's like, whoopee, a goalkeeper's brilliant with a ball at his feet. That's not what he's there to do. He's there to stop shots. The people who should be better with the ball at their feet are the defenders, midfielders and attackers. The simple fact of the matter is somewhere along the way, a system has to be played that these players are going to buy into and they're going to get behind. Because the last couple of games, there has been evidence, smaller evidence in other games, I accept, against quality oppositions, that necessarily we're not buying into what they're being told to do. Again, just my opinion. I was going on Saturday about a change in formation. I don't think it's going to come, but I would still prefer to see a 4-2-3-1. But that's just my personal thing. The long and short of it, Aaron, is until we suddenly start to get at teams again, like we did at Middlesbrough. Look, if we can just put in a performance like we did at Middlesbrough, as I say, it's not going to win people over. But a performance like that and a result like that will just calm everyone down just a touch. And until we see something like that on a regular basis, people are always going to be, we're always going to be worried. We're always going to be wary. And we are right to be because of the position we now find ourselves in. 4 or 5 games ago, we had an 8-point cushion to the bottom three. It is now 2. I don't know what's going on tonight. I don't care. I'm not one for celebrating other teams scoring goals and not scoring goals and things until we're getting our own house in order. Once our own house is in order, by all means, then we can get excited about what's going on elsewhere. But right now, until we suddenly turn this form around, then in my opinion, it's probably going to end up being irrelevant what happens elsewhere because eventually it will catch up on us anyway. So we need to turn it around quickly. We need to get some belief into the dressing room. We need to get some confidence and just have a right go at it, because it's becoming a bit frustrating that we're getting beat in games and we're just going out like a light. And me and Sam have referred to it on the last couple of podcasts, this soft underbelly. We have to be stronger. We have to be more physical. We have to be stronger. And let's just give it a right good go and see where it gets us at Saturday at 5 p.m. And if it's not enough, then that's a conversation for Sunday's episode into Monday. But all we can do is focus on Blackburn and do everything we can to get 3 points. I don't know what the magic answer is. If I did, then I'd probably be trying to get hold of Ian Foster right now. But there's a reason I'm only a panelist on a podcast who works the occasional shift in a turf accountancy business. So let's just hope and pray that there's enough minds in that dressing room who can sort it out quickly.
Say, if you don't have the answers, I definitely don't. John?
Can I just quickly interject on the subject of goalkeepers? You need to say thank you very much to Alex Palmer, formerly Argyle, for saving a penalty for West Brom against QPR and for another West Brom defender for handling the ball off the line for the referee not to notice. Superb work from both of them. Thank you very much.
I think we'll call that a night then. As Sam's already alluded to, really appreciate over 2,000 people tuning in. It will go up as a video. Make sure you go and check that out. Give that a like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Make sure you drop us a like on or follow even on Twitter. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I'm back on TikTok. I've learned a new way to do TikToks. Yay. I've been spending my time
to do one of those TikTok dance crazes eventually, aren't we?
That'll be good. Or just a big collection of photos of Sam down in his
standing up.
Obviously, go and check us out on all your podcast platforms as well, Apple Pods, etc., etc. Cheers, guys. We'll be back on post Blackburn on Sunday. I can't remember who's joining me. I was going to ask Joe to host and give up that slot, but he's just reminded me that he's not here. So I'll have to do it. I'll have to sit there and not say anything yet again. Oh, QPR's goal has been disallowed. So there you go, Sam.
Yes, come on.
Yeah, brilliant.
Cheers, guys. I'll even do a TikTok dance.
Is Dan not on Sunday? Well, he said he would.
He would. What? Brilliant. Right, cool. Right, see you later. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Bye, guys.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.